baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Race and Sportsbook, you are listening to another episode of the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the devious and dastardly Goes, our ace co-host. Sup?
What up?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. To you too. I'm excited about this year.
Tell me why.
I did some New Year's resolutions, but I'm doing them differently this year.
Share one with the audience.
All right. Well, okay, so what I'm doing is I'm doing them individually to each person. So I have one New Year's resolution per person. So in other words, there's a manager here in the sports book, Matt. Mm-hmm. So my New Year's resolution is with him once a month to get to the park and just either throw the football around or the baseball.
Okay.
And so then you go to the next person.
You have a glove?
No, I need to get one.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've been wanting to get one anyway.
I noticed you tossing around that football, so I guess you're warming up the arm.
I guess I just came up with it yesterday, but...
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, folks, hopefully you all had a safe and a happy New Year. And MMA does not go away. There's never an off season in MMA, and that's why we're back here, ready to do another Junkie Radio episode. On today's episode, we're going to discuss... the results from Ryzen FF 20, PFL 2019 Championship. Of course, there's some news and nuggets out there. Dana White did an interview that where he touched on a few of the popular topics, some of the big names involved in our sport, some of the ones that are standing outside, staring into the sport. When are you going to come back, Nick Diaz? I don't know. Of course, we'll start the preview to what 2019 is going to look like. And that should do it. So buckle up, folks. Here we go. It's the MMA Junkie Radio Show on a Thursday, January 2nd. Ever hear about the ex-football star who robbed a Brinks truck, tucked $400,000 under his arm like a football, and escaped using an inner tube? Then you'll want to listen to Season 1 of The Sneak, a podcast by For the Win and USA Today Sports. Take a quick listen to the man who pulled it off.
In 2008, a former D1 football star pulled off a robbery so daring and so strange that it went viral worldwide. It was a perfect crime story. There was just one problem. It wasn't the real story of what happened.
I didn't just one day wake up and decide to rob an armored truck. There were smaller things that had happened. I promised, like, myself, this is the last thing I was going to do. The more, like, elaborate something is and the more moving parts, but that's more shit that can, like, go wrong. I made some crucial errors. Number one, I escaped on an inner tube. Number two, I hired decoys to help me pull off the robbery. Every single thing I wanted to do, I did. My transformation, I guess, as a person, came at the worst time of my life. I pulled this off. I wasn't worried about money anymore, but I was more miserable than ever. No money can change, like, who somebody is as a person. I was busted by a homeless guy.
The Sneak is a new, serialized true crime podcast from For the Win and USA Today Sports, streaming only on Wondery Plus. Subscribe at wondery.com/PLUS.
In the land of the rising sun, Ryzen FF20 took place about 2 days ago, yeah. Remember, it's really the 30th over here on the Pacific time zone. It was the 31st over there. It gets so confusing, but I took a peek in. Thank you to our friends at Fight TV. And it started off unfortunate, it goes, because one of the cats that I see a lot at the gym, Johnny Case, suffered a loss in the lightweight Grand Prix semifinal. However, Patrick Frady won via TKO, punches and soccer kick, to continue Coach Eric Albadacin's assault
this on terror.
Coach of the Year. Exactly. So there you have it. Frady versus Musayev will be your Grand Prix final. Although Frady confessed that he went into the fight with a broken hand.
Into the fight, yeah.
The severity of it, who knows? Who knows if he was even looked at and how closely he was looked at. But a lot, I've heard that before. Fighters have been able to mask that. You just have to grimace when your hand's being touched and grabbed and twisted and manipulated and whatever. Patrick Mix, they call him Patchy. Guy I've told you all, keep an eye on. He actually had to fight out of a submission, but he got himself a submission win. Round one win, so I was keeping an eye on him. Of course, it's always fun to watch. Excuse me, I thought I had to sneeze there. Satoshi Ishii, who won a gold medal for Japan years ago and has been a, you know, one of their bigger names that just never could get going. You know, Japan, ever since I think Sakuraba really, really wanted to have somebody, you know, and a lot of fighters tried. Fujita, Nakamura, Gomi had some success, obviously, but still, like, no one to the level of a Sakuraba. And honestly, Sakuraba was more of a pioneer slash successful fighter because of the personality that he was, but it's not like you'd look at and find a 30-1 record with next to Sakuraba's name. Mm-hmm. It's just that he fought everybody, and that's what made him so special. But Jake Hune defeated Satoshi Ishii, and as we progress through the card, Jiří Procházka defeated CB Dalloway, knockout punch, round one. So he defended his light heavyweight title out there. That's what Holloway was moving up for that belt. Now, as we progress, do you want to say something?
Oh, I was going to say, you know what I find brutal, not just on our website, but other websites, is when we do interviews before the fight with these fighters, like a CB Dalloway, right, his first fight over there, and they talk about the changes that they've made. This is usually later in fighters' careers, major, major changes, and then they just kind of get laid out in the fight. I feel so bad for those people, because that's like you've been brought up to... If things aren't going your way, make changes in your life. And when you're able to do them and accomplish them, you're in such great spirits. And it just shows how brutal our sport is, that even when you do everything right, you still could fail very badly.
Oh, yeah.
And it just sucks, you know? It usually has to do with the diet, that sort of stuff, or a move, moving your entire family across country to a new camp.
Or being away from
your
family.
You go for three or something, you know? Like, this sport is so brutal and, like... The way CB Dalloway went down, that kind of sucked, man. I mean, he's a nice guy. He got beat up kind of bad, you know, with that punch. And he had a pretty good interview with us on MMA Junkie and just talking about all the changes that he made in his life. And it's just sad to see one person's emotions being so high and then, boom, they just fall like that.
Right. I will say this. I was just thinking about it as you were talking. CB was like a state champion in high school for wrestling. Then he went to Arizona where he became an All-American. So also think about how MMA probably humbles a lot of people into their second chapter of their life. That's or true. Whatever chapter they're moving into, you know, however you want to call it. From athletics to just being a non-professional athlete. And it's got to be crushing to exit, you know, leaving the UFC after so many fights, because that was his home, you know, and then coming over to Ryzen and getting smashed. And again, if you've been used to winning, I'm telling you, man, people are competitive in video games, the ping pong table, you name it, a water balloon toss, an egg toss. It doesn't matter. You don't want to lose. So, yeah, that's why a lot of them have problems exiting. You know, everyone wants to be next to them and get their autographs and pictures and blah, blah, blah. And then it all can go away so quickly.
For sure.
Yeah. And put that together with the fact that our sport has some of the cruelest fans, you know, and can be very unpleasant. So then we move into the finals. I mentioned, as I'm taking it in order for the lightweight Grand Prix, Taoufiq Musaev defeated Patrick Efrady in the Grand Prix final via unanimous decision. So Taoufiq Musaev is your Grand Prix winner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As we move along in the card, John Teixeira and Lindsey Van Zandt took some losses. I knew both of those fighters. And we get to the final, the main event of Manel Cape versus Kai Asakara. Manel Cape, he wins. He claims the vacant bantamweight title via TKO punches in round two. And there you have it, folks. There's Ryzen FF20. What I didn't get clarification on was if Patrick Efrady entered the whole tournament with a broken hand or into the final with a broken hand.
I'm imagining that he went into the final with a broken hand.
Got it. Okay. All right. Any thoughts on Ryzen FF20 before we move on?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, it's the end of the year, so what they've done in 2019 isn't really that impressive to me. I mean, they've done enough to stick around and say they're here, and it's nice that they have the little Bellator partnership that they do. But other than that, you're right. Like, as soon as you started talking about Sakura, I'm like, they haven't really replenished those stars, whether it's in Japan or here stateside. So in 2020, I'd love to see them do a little bit more. I love Grand Prix, but at the end of the day, if the winner or the belt that you get doesn't really mean much, then there's no sense in having them.
Yeah. Look, the UFC is the NFL, and I don't know how to explain this. There's a little bit of every promotion that can excite me, but you got to touch certain nerves or taste buds. You know what I mean? With me, otherwise it's like,
not to mention the time difference, you know,
the time of the year, you know, the competition that's out there. Remember, goes UFC, pretty much, I think Bellator, then PFL, then one championship, then even maybe some of the regional promotions before I really circle back to Ryzen, which Ryzen really, you know, they're trying. They tried to sign some names, but look, we'll get into a little bit of signing names in that topic with some PFL talk. So let's just go to PFL talk, and we'll put Ryzen FF20 to bed. It's in the books, and there you have it. PFL 2019, where millionaires are born. We'll go in order. Brandon Lochnane defeated David Valente. This was just a prelim bout on the seven fight card. And then we get into the title fights. They moved over to ESPN2 and Emiliano Sordi. First round KO over Jordan Johnson. I remember Jordan Johnson in the UFC was undefeated at one point. He was like 10-0 overall, 3-0 in the UFC. And I think he was even ranked or an honorable mention at light heavyweight. We move over to Lance Palmer versus Alex Gilpin, who fought for the third time. Featherweight final, unanimous decision, 50-43, 50-44, 50-44. Very, very dominant. So now Lance Palmer's won two seasons, $1 million each.
Legit, right? Right time, right place.
Andre Harrison, remember we went like 21-0, 22-0, and this would have been something that I'm sure would have been great for him. Mm-hmm. He didn't even make it to the final here.
Yeah, at least the 200 grand.
Exactly, yeah. So Lance Palmer, who took a loss to Andre Harrison, has peaked at the right time. $1 million paydays. And look, you didn't hear it from me. Actually, you did. But if anybody's wondering, these guys, somebody shared with us, and I can't tell you who, but if you're wondering, well, how much of that million do they get? After paying out coaches and taxes, you know, all the different expenses that are involved with a camp and, you know, for this million-dollar fight, I was told by one fighter $650,000 was the take-home. So anybody that thinks, splitting it with Uncle Sam, you know, 50, no, you're able to write some stuff off. And I don't think there's an actual 50% percentile for, you know, these fighters.
But I thought when you add in coaches and stuff, when you add in the coaches and the training camp, I thought it would take it even lower. But
Yeah, but look, if somebody's been coaching you for just to, for the regular season, like, did, are they coaching you that much better to get to the final? Like, if they're coaching you for a 50 and 50, you make 100 grand. Mm-hmm. And the next one, you possibly make a million. So for the 50 and 50, let's say you're my coach. I'm going to make 50 and 50. And I tell you, I'll give you 5,000, I guess. Mm-hmm. You probably go, all right. Right?
I guess. But okay. I feel like the higher higher.
Are you going to get 50 grand for the same thing? Probably not. You and I are going to talk about it. And I'll go, hey, look, if I win, you'll get your normal 5, and I'll toss in a bonus of 25. That brings it to 30 or 20. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it changes me. And remember, fighters are quick to go, well, maybe I'll go across the street, you know, across the city and go to another gym. But I don't know. I did hear from one coach who told me his biggest payday was a PFL winner as well. But yeah, it's not as high as you would think. And I guess when you put it in perspective, it's basically the same job. I mean, think about it. If you coach Lance Palmer twice, and then in the third one he makes a million, but the first time you coached him the 2 wins over Alex Gilp, and Palmer might be thinking, I kind of don't really need you.
Yeah.
I kind of own this guy. But anyway, no disrespect to Alex Gilp. All right, Natan Schulte defeated Loic Radziboff. Unanimous decision there. 49-44, 49-46, 48-47. This one was more competitive because Radziboff was tough early on. Then Schulte took over with some leg kicks and some jiu-jitsu, some takedowns in jiu-jitsu and riding time, and he got the win. He's another back-to-back millionaire.
Towards the end, didn't it almost seem like his legs almost like a baby fawn, you know, like a baby deer just falling over? Mm-hmm. Like, can you imagine a professional athlete just getting toppled over like that with leg kicks? That's how brutal the sport can
be. And why is it the American Top Team, I'm not going to say is the only gym that does it, but they're the prominent team that does it. You know, you don't even have to know. I already knew Natan Schulte barely speaks any English. He's from Brazil, the southern part, if I'm not mistaken, of Brazil. But after a couple leg kicks, I was reminded, oh, that's right, he trains at Coconut Creek, Florida, you know. Yeah. And again, I know other gyms do it, but it just seems like American Top Team puts a big, big emphasis on it. And those kicks are just debilitating. Ali Isaev, who I told you all keep an eye on, he fought my boy Jared Rochalt. So no 49ers game for me.
Nope.
Unless he wants to take it out of that $200,000 cut. But yeah, look, I was cheering for Rochalt. I bet on Rochalt, but I knew Isaev was a pretty tough guy, man. He's also very tough on the ground, has some hands. Big, big, imposing cat, undefeated, stays undefeated. TKO punches in round 4. I thought for a while there he might be gassing and Jared might be turning it on, but that never happened. And, well, it did for a while, but Isaev was just able to get the best of him, and he wins.
It was a weird way that fight ended.
Yeah.
You know, it just...
It seemed like ground and pound wasn't too effective, right? And then all of a sudden, one of them just landed on the kisser, and that was it.
And it felt like it was just the way they were throwing. I thought there was going to be more of a spectacular ending, and it just kind of just went away.
They were tired and sloppy, and that's why I thought, okay, well, who's going to win the wrestling? Who's going to dig deep? And then who can get on top and maybe ground and pound, you know? And that's what Isaev did. Ray Cooper III defeated David Machaud. Boy, I could not have been more wrong about a fighter. I saw Machaud get waxed by Sadabusi.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, what's this other guy doing in this tournament? I could think of 100 welterweights that could get in here, you know, and he's just taking up space.
He's the Rudy of the PFL.
I could not have been more wrong, man. Not only did he fight well the rest of the time, dug deep in the semis here at Mandalay Bay, but he turned it around on Ray Cooper. I mean, he was swinging hard. He was wrestling with him. He hurt Cooper, man. I thought I was going to lose that bet. Instead, Cooper turned it around. TKO punches, round 2. But this fight, which lasted about 8 minutes, was nonstop. It was awesome. I liked it.
I thought he was going to actually get Cooper. When he threw the knee, when he kept throwing the knees and he kept landing them, I thought there was one where it looked like Ray got really hurt and shot in on him a little bit. And I thought, this is it. And somehow Ray dug deep. And I mean, that guy really, say what you will about him.
He dug deep on the body, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. Say what you will about his personality. He's a little quiet, but that dude really has done a lot for PFL. And if you could just open up a little bit more, you see the way, like, Elima Lay, what she does for Hawaiians and just the attention she brings. I think he could do something similar. Just bring a little bit more attention to the PFL. Because when you do get him to open up, he smiles. He seems kind of charismatic. I'd like to see him do more of that.
Right. And so now he's a millionaire. And maybe that's what'll put him at ease, goes him and his family. There was either a Twitter post or a story on Junkie that said his $1 million payday was $993,000 more than his dad ever made, which I think was, I think if you do the quick math, his dad, the most he ever made in a fight was $7,000. Because remember, he's an OG.
Yeah.
They weren't making much then. I hope I read that right. I don't know. But it was something like that. But, you know, his whole family's involved in everything. And I bet you this money's really going to go a long way to just...
I hope
maybe
so.
Maybe putting things at ease, taking the pressure off, and now maybe the having fun part of his career starts. Mm-hmm. Kayla Harrison defeated Larissa Pacheco. Unanimous decision there. 50-43, 50-44, 50-45. Round five got a little bit exciting because a couple of her takedowns were stopped. And Pacheco, the one thing you could always tell was her power sustains throughout the fight. And even Harrison admitted as much, you know, that she did get hit. But eventually she was just too much of a freight train for Pacheco, and she got the win. She's a millionaire. Her whole family came into the Decagon as well, and it was cool to see. So there you have it, folks. That's PFL 2019, the championship at Madison Square Garden in New York. And, of course, 30 minutes later, because this was a long card, the ball dropped, and it was time to ring in the New Year. I don't even know if they had time to get out of there in time to – go up about 20 blocks to Times Square, where I'm sure it was chaos, but you know, you guys know what I mean. That was it, man. That was the PFL card for December 31st. Any thoughts on that card?
I thought it was okay. Really, the Cooper fight was what made the card.
Yeah, I
it
agree.
Was a lot of fun.
It was anticlimactic. The dominance of Harrison in the next.
Yeah, some of
she
them.
She had a round to Rousey run, like where it was just something super quick.
Mm-hmm.
You
had a little bit of the drama from their first fight, you know, the way Kayla reacted. I like Kayla Harrison. I think she's a really cool person and fighter. I can see that she's getting better, so I get excited about that. But it's just, you know, like next year, what are we going to do? I hope she has somebody to go with.
It's the same path as Cyborg, where they're building around one fighter, and that fighter's, you know, pretty destructive. Cyborg was destructive in another way. I mean, she was like the violent destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And Harrison looks like she has some of that, but it's more of the Rousey destruction, you know, with a judo hip toss, seeking submissions.
I'm okay with it.
The most crowd pleasing. And Harrison is a beautiful woman, but I don't know that she's got the striking looks that I think drew a lot of people towards Rousey. And I'm not saying, you know, Rousey was some Sports Illustrated swimsuit model or whatever, but I just feel like more people talked about her and her beauty side than they are about Harrison and her beauty side.
I think people liked her gangster side.
Her gangster side as well, yeah.
She kind of reminded me a little of
maybe it was
like
just the right timing, you know. Just like she was just there at the right time. Like, hey, Harrison's probably got it. So are you the next Ronda Rousey? Ronda was just like, so are you the next Gina Carano? But she separated herself so quickly from Carano because she was doing things differently. You know what I mean? And then for Rousey, you could probably say, well, Carano probably has more the Hollywood look that everyone falls in love with, you know.
Kayla gets compared to her a lot, though. I mean, honestly, when you judokas, Olympics, I mean, there's just a lot of comparisons you can make.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what they do. I mean, look, they're just going to next season. I don't know. Can they fight eight women that are, I mean, look, she's big, dude. She's a big gal. You know, she's pretty destructive force. And so, yeah, are we going to tune in just to see someone crush? Okay. Like with Mike Tyson, everybody always brings the Tyson Rousey comparison. Tyson was only 5'11". You know what I mean? 220. And he was clowning big dudes that were like 6'4". I mean, like, whereas, like, with Cyborg, she was visibly bigger than most of her opponents. And that's kind of what Harrison is, too. So it's almost like, well, you better destroy him. I mean, look how big you are. You know what I mean? Compared to the rest of them. The rest of them are coming up from 35 or some from 45. So
but
Kayla just really believes in, hey, I don't like the excessive weight cutting. And because she's admitted she could make 45. And if she could, then maybe it would be a different wrinkle, a different twist. But they created a whole division for her here that's 20 pounds away from where most of the top competition is for the ladies that are a little bit bigger size, you know? I don't even want to mention that there's a 45-pound division because in the UFC, there's only three of them that are signed. And in Bellator, they might have, what, another half dozen? Mm-hmm. There's 10 women that walk the planet that can fight at 45. And here we are creating the 55 division. So let's see. Maybe she could be a champ. Maybe they can sell it to her that way.
God. Do you think she's done enough to separate herself from Ronda Rousey? Where she can say, hey, man, quit asking me that. I'm Kayla Harrison.
Mm-mm.
No?
Because she hasn't done it on the stage of Ronda Rousey. I mean, Ronda Rousey was spectacle.
So she's got to be in the UFC to shed that?
Either that or she needs three seasons of just staying undefeated and plowing through everyone. You know, like when you quote Habib stats and you go, he's 28-0. And then when somebody goes, yeah, but, and then tries to put the argument of someone else. And then you go, not only is he not lost a fight, he barely loses a round, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you're the other side, amazing. You just kind of go, yeah, I guess I better shut up. There's really not much I can offer here. You know what I mean? And that's what some of these guys and gals are. So, yeah, it's going to take a little bit to reach. I mean, people like Charlize Theron and Halle Berry and, you know, there's a lot of famous female, you know, stars, actors and athletes or whatever. They knew who Ronda Rousey was. They were at her fights. And in Kayla Harrison, look, we're being kind. This was in the Hulu Theater inside of Madison Square Garden, not at Madison Square Garden. So the stage isn't there yet. They were on ESPN2, though, and that I really, really loved. But so let's just see what they can do.
You know what helped Ronda out a lot, too, was a little bit of that crossover into being on Entourage and things like that.
That's what the UFC does.
Hope something, maybe Kayla can do something like that.
The UFC is just so big. It's the NFL. So, again, Rousey was doing superstar moments, we'll say, in playoff games, in Super Bowl. Not every fight was a Super Bowl. Well, I guess maybe you could argue that it was her Super Bowl. But think about the stage of the Super Bowl and what it is. And these fights are maybe like a bowl game in college or something like that. Sure, it might be the Cotton Bowl is probably big in Dallas, Texas. The Peach Bowl is probably big in Atlanta, Georgia. They probably have a parade beforehand and everything. Some marching bands. But outside of that, I mean, not as much. All right, real quick. Palmer and Schulte are being teased for two champs to fight off. And I suppose if they want to do something on a card that has nothing to do with them getting injured or whatever, I don't see why they would want to risk. Look, they got an offseason to chill.
$1 million over it.
And then in May, it's another run. Why would you want to? You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it unless there was like $1 million at stake. But I don't think the PFL should do that because I'm not interested in the PFL spending $1 million of their dollars to find out who the better guy is between these two champions or $500,000. No, use that to sign more fighters.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what Ray Sefo was asked. In fact, let's take a quick little break here, and then we'll come back with news nuggets, because that's what that is. It's a news nugget, and the results here from these past two cards are in the book. So there you have it, folks. We'll be right back. So Ray Sefo was asked, you know, what's kind of like the future? And he kind of gave a bucket list for 2020. He didn't really get into specifics, but basically he says he wants to sign more big names, kind of like what Rory McDonald did. Rory McDonald was a big signing that they showed off there at PFL, not just with the media, but on television. And okay, we tip our hat. It was legit. I really enjoyed seeing that, hearing about it, everything. But like you've always said, are you shelling out big bucks for one guy when you could maybe be signing a bunch of other fights? So in other words, you know, like in the NFL, I always go to the NFL. If you have a shot at the big quarterback, the number one draft pick, Joe Burrow, we'll say, right, from LSU. But let's just say you already have a great quarterback. Then you know how you trade down and you get a bunch, you stockpile a bunch of 2 second rounders, third rounders, four rounders. That's what I want the PFL to do is get some of those and really, really have competitive weight classes where we're saying, oh, wow, you know, like, I'm excited to see if so-and-so can double, you know, can go back-to-back. No disrespect to Natan Schulte, but I don't think too many people care that he went back-to-back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I bet you could find a lot of lightweights that you could toss in there to at least push this guy and put him over or something.
Especially at lightweight.
Especially at lightweight. I agree. I don't know. I look at their champions, Harrison, Cooper, Isaev, Schulte, Palmer, and Sorti. I think other than Cooper and Harrison, it's just hard for the common American fan who's watching on ESPN2 to get emotionally attached. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe Palmer a little bit if you continue to compete, continue to push the Ohio State angle. Look, Ohio State, I think, is number one in college hoops. They almost played for the national title in football. Something that just continues to push that Buckeye thing. And, of course, from Palmer, he's a little Midwest and dry. If he just had some, like, swag, some, you know, remember what?
Be more of the party.
What Wineland said? Yeah, exactly. Be more of the party. I'm just a hillbilly that, a corn-fed hillbilly that can throw down or something like that.
Likes to get down or something like that.
Yeah. Just, man, we're just waiting for a quote or something like that. Be the party or be your pops. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I bet you so many more fans could get behind him. Cooper's just got the look, the Hawaiian crowd, the backing that he's got, you know, from them, his exciting style. Harrison, of course, is a star for them. But
I want him to do what AJ McKee does.
That's what I want Bellator. From Ray Sefo is some signings that really, really just get us excited. And you know what? You're going to have to get some guys that are former Bellator and UFC fighters.
Mm-hmm. Because that's
the name that they carry. You know what I mean?
That's okay. I'm totally down with that. But just have those cards a little bit more stacked and just have guys with personality. Like Chris Curtis is fun. I like Chris Curtis. Mm-hmm. Grab some more of those type of dudes and throw them in the mix. Some veterans, some up-and-comers. Make it exciting.
Yeah. Champ doesn't do anything for me. Unfortunately, if you're going to try and put your league over like they're trying to do on ESPN, the first thing that people are going to wonder is how would they do in the UFC? And the champ doesn't really convince us of anything. You know what I mean? Use your money wisely and sign the big names that are out there that can help move your league. And also, I'm sorry, but limit the amount of international fighters on your roster. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's in any way you know, some sort of an insensitive comment towards non-English speakers or international fighters or anything. It's just that your audience is America for the most part. You know what I mean? You don't travel abroad. You don't have shows abroad or anything. So you don't have to feature somebody from Dagestan or Argentina or anything like that. I'll put it to you this way. I think the Spanish league, for sure, and I know the English league, there's a certain amount of internationals you can have per team. The English is more flexible. That's why you see a lot of African players, a lot of different European players, South American players. But they wanted that in the past because what they wanted is their domestic players to play in the domestic league so that you get experience and your national team can be good. But then this became big business, and I think the Spanish league doesn't allow as many internationals. But the English league allows more, but they still have their limits. Same thing with this league. That's what they need to do. Look, if you're going to have 12 per and 8 advance, so 12 per division, 8 advance, maybe limit it to eight North Americans for sure. And then after that, man, I'm sorry, 4 internationals.
I'd be okay with that. I mean, I like Brendan Lochleam. He's an international, but I like what they're doing with him.
Yeah.
You know, that could pay off. But yeah, they've taken their chances before, like, you know, bringing over Will Brooks. I remember when they said it, that was nice. It didn't really work out for them, but you got to keep trying.
Keep trying, exactly. You got to keep trying. It's what allows fans to connect the dots. Oh yeah, I remember him from. Oh yeah, he's a former champion from. Oh yeah, he won that big fight, that Grand Prix, that whatever. You know what I mean? And I know that some will say, no, we're trying. I mean, Ray would probably tell me, George, we're trying to sign the best. Sorry, Ray, again, the best are in the UFC because they're challenged at every fight. I'm not saying one of your guys can't beat a UFC fighter. I'm just saying the toughest competition in every weight class is in the UFC. So don't worry about that. Don't worry about, like, well, we want our guy, because we're not going to ever cross promote. You're never going to go fight the UFC guy. The only way you'll ever prove that is if your guys eventually leave your league and go to the UFC, much like Marias and Gaethje have done. And that's why we don't doubt that your guys can do that. But you're not trying to prove this to the hardcores. You're trying to prove it to the casual fan tuning into ESPN2, and they want to see fights, and they just want to connect with fighters. Because remember you and I think I've said this example before. just right here, we went to see boxing in downtown Las Vegas. Who was I a big fan of? And I had never heard of him, but he was funny. His fans were funny. Remember that rooster guy from Palm Springs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that dude. You know what I mean? And so when we went back, I remember they gave me the little card as I was walking in, you know, to see who was on the little 5x7 glossy. Hey, the rooster's back. All right, cool. You know, and I remember I think I was getting a hot dog and I go, oh, the rooster's about to fight. I went to my seat. You know what I mean? Or if I was going to the restroom, the rooster's going to fight in two fights. I got to go to the bathroom or grab my beer. I was invested in the rooster. You know, he had a decent record. He's like 9-1 and he had a crazy style, you know, a fight. But the fans got behind him. Everyone got behind him because he had something to say. He had a look to him.
You know who's doing exactly what you're talking about that I think is doing a very good job of it?
Who?
Is Bare Knuckle. I think they've been able to get guys. Like, every once in a while, there's a press release where I go, oh, man, cool, that guy's there. I'm, like, willing to tune in.
Yeah, Hector Lombard and Joe Diesel Riggs, right?
Yeah, Hector Lombard, that's a great signing.
Exactly.
Those type of guys. If you told me Hector Lombard, now he's in the PFL, I'd go, bet. You know, Hick Diaz, he's in there too. Like that, and those type of signings are good.
And you're kind of rooting for him because you know that hopefully one of them can win $1 million too.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on here. Edson Barbosa's thinking of dropping to 45. Where's he going to cut it? He's like chiseled out of stone. I just don't see how he's going to. Then again,
only be muscle.
Think that Jose Aldo could do it, and he did it. God bless Edson Barbosa. I thought he was one of the better 55ers. He's been a true test for everybody. He just comes up short in the big fights. That doesn't mean he's not a good 45er. I guess he just wants to open up opportunities for himself, according to his manager, Alex Davis. So, again, God bless him. Let him go down there. But, man, he's now older. And, again, when he's weighed in, I've always thought, geez, I don't think you could get another half pound out of him, much less 10.
You have to shave his head or something because, I mean, it all has to be muscle. There's just no way. Like you said, there's not even an ounce of fat on that dude.
Yeah. Nick Diaz. So Dana White is kind of leaving the door open. Sure, I'd love to have him, but he kind of keeps saying the same thing. I don't even think that Nick wants to fight, he's saying. He said that his managers have had contact with him in a recent interview with ESPN. The matchmakers have had contact with him. It sounds like there's some interest, but then when it all boils down, nothing ever happens. And that's why Dana White feels like more than likely, yeah, this guy would come back probably for a payday, but not because he loves MMA. And I think what he's trying to tell us is, look, if this guy comes back, don't expect the same. Don't expect, you know, the top contender that challenged GSP or was ready to challenge anyone else or the champion that beat Paul Daly, you know, in Strikeforce. It's just going to be a polarizing, popular name who we'll pay a big check to, and he'll do good for ratings or pay-per-views or whatever. But I don't think I think what he's trying to say subliminally is that he just doesn't think that Diaz has enough love for the game that the best Nick Diaz will show up.
They don't need him. I mean, and that's like the situation when you dive into a little bit of Nick Diaz's personal life. I think there's enough red flags there where you go, look, man, we don't need him. And I don't know if we want to be the cause of anything bad happening here. Let's just let that guy be him and we'll just move on, you know, focus on some of these other guys.
They still have his contract, though. That's the weird thing. You know, sometimes when you part ways, you're like, you know, we're just out of the Nick Diaz business. And then you detach. So let's say Nick Diaz, God forbid, does something horrible in 2 years. And they say former UFC fighter, and they go to the UFC for comment. The UFC could easily say, we parted ways with Nick Diaz back in 2016. You know, he hasn't been a part of this roster for a long time. But they have him there just in case Nick wants to fight. They know he's big money. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Focus on guys like AJ.
I think what he's trying to tell us is he'd probably come back and maybe give you that feeling that Rampage just gave us for what he did to Bellator. I'm not saying a 265-pound Diaz is showing up. I'm just saying a disinterested Diaz is showing up.
Yeah.
I don't know, but he talked
about
it.
And he'll tell you that in the post-fight interview, and then you're going to go, well, then why'd you fight? And then you're going to think to yourself, well, then why'd I pay? Why'd the UFC put him in that situation? Like, it just seems like too much of a headache.
He also unveiled that when him and Floyd Mayweather were spotted next to each other at a Celtics-Clippers game in November, he kind of said, look, Floyd and I, we've been talking, you know, we want to conduct business. He kind of kept it really, really vanilla back then. This time he said, that what they talked about is Floyd competing. Mm-hmm. So that eliminated, oh, Zuffa boxing, they're going to co-promote or this or that. Now, he still didn't say, we want to run it back with Conor. He also didn't say, we want to do that. We want to do the same thing we did with Conor with Habib. None of that. All he said is, we got to let some things play out.
But that's all that really makes sense,
Conor's got a fight
right?
coming up, and Habib's got a fight coming up, huh?
That's all that really makes sense, though. Like
one of those two?
Yeah, like Habib in Russia makes sense, okay. I can't think of any other guys that you would possibly want to do something like that with. Maybe Masvidal, someone like that, but I mean, how many times are we going to do this?
Yeah, he said, the quote is, the money is in Floyd competing. He says he doesn't like crossover fights, but he's willing to do it. Here's the thing, though. If you're saying that McGregor, if he beats Cerrone, is next for Habib and Tony, that means Conor is highly thought of as a title contender. And I don't understand. I don't know how I can explain this. Maybe I shouldn't even just go down this rabbit hole. But it's a little irritating for me because...
Very irritating.
Floyd versus Conor in boxing is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Floyd versus Habib in boxing is ridiculous. Floyd versus those same two guys in our sport is ridiculous. It may even be more ridiculous. All right? But 4-ounce gloves does make things a little bit nutty. But I you know, and Floyd has quick hands. I mean, I imagine he's got a puncher's chance. See, we can never say never because of what Ray Mercer did to Tim Sylvia.
Yeah. We've yet to go that way. Conor.
Yeah, we've yet to go that way and win one. They've come this way and won one, folks, in the history of MMA, if you want to look it up. But it is just so irritating to me to think that he wants to co-promote this again for it to be a thought. You know what I mean? But because it involves money, they're willing to do it. And they're coming off their biggest 2019. Just focus on your sport.
Exactly.
Who cares about Floyd competing in boxing against Conor? Here's what I was going to say, goes. The way the guy jumps around, he says, you know what? Conor can't fight Jorge in Masvidal. Jorge's too big. He can't fight him in MMA. The same sport. No, Jorge's too big for Conor. Conor got upset with Dana. That's why I think he's fighting at 170 to prove he can hang with the 170 guys. But he was like, no, he can't do that. I don't want to see that. But yet he wants to see Conor box Floyd? That's even less competitive.
Yeah, it makes no sense. It makes zero sense. But really, it all comes down to money. And they just, that's the thing. I think that's what turns people off is they make it so obvious. I mean, he might as well be having like two bags of money in his hand as he's saying it, making it rain.
Yeah, so... That's what they talked about was Floyd competing. Who will compete against? I don't know. In that same ESPN interview with Brett Okamoto, he did again say that he verified that Conor will fight Cerrone at 170. And basically, another thing that irritated me was he said, look, they both, it counts for 155, their stature at 155. Their title contention at 155, but they don't have to cut the weight. Well, why has everyone else got to cut the weight?
Yeah, makes zero sense.
You know what I mean? Why does one guy get so many privileges?
I think it's ridiculous, especially outside looking in. Anybody that doesn't even really, even the guys that know the sport think it's crazy. But outside looking in, the casuals, the guys you see up on ESPN, on Fox Sports, all those guys, they must be laughing their ass off.
If he beats Cowboy, he gets a title shot. Justin Gaethje beat Cowboy. You know what I mean? So he should be next for his title shot because Conor apparently didn't want to fight Justin Gaethje. You should have made that one at 170 or whatever. Then we could have stomached it. You could have made it at 185. I wouldn't have cared. I would have said, all right, but he's fighting the guy that's holding the key to get into the gate, the gatekeeper. Even though it's gatekeeper is mostly looked at as someone that's way out of title contention. I'm talking about the gatekeeper to the title.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't even give us that. And then we hear, oh, my God. And then I hear that and the fact that the BMF, the thing that was supposed to be a one-time thing, well, Conor wants it.
Yeah. Silly. It's all silly.
Oh, man. My God. I mean, that's why Conor goes, you know what? I want to be an owner. I want to be a part owner. And then Dana goes, you know, we can't do that. Don't be silly, Connor. We can't be doing that. But we can be doing all these other things you want. Oh, my God. It's it drives me nuts at times. Peter Yan says, stop the circus. Let me and Aljamain Sterling fight for the 135-pound belt.
I love that quote.
What circus?
I love that quote. I love the fact that Peter Yan, for not speaking the language, he gets out there quite a bit.
With the clown angle?
He's just clown funny. Like, circus? I kind of like him, man. Like, even the ruckus in the back there with Cody. I like this dude, man. And I like that he realizes that he's going to be a star, and he's starting to call his own shots a little bit, getting in the mix. It kind of reminds me of what Triple C was trying to do in the beginning, except just not as corny.
So Triple C has already said relinquish the 125-pound belt, so he's really Double C. But all right, we keep going Triple C because he did accomplish it. What Peter Yan is saying, Cejudo keeps angling for, remember he said, if Faber wins, I want Faber, I want Cruz, I want everyone but the top guys. That's what he's calling the circus show. He's saying, look, he doesn't want to fight the top guys. Let us do this, and then he can go have his money fights and just, you know, be a rock star or whatever. For anybody that was wondering, that's the angle that he looked at. And honestly, I would be down for that if Cejudo wanted to be part of the bad motherfucker rotation and he wanted to get in. Who knows? Throw him in there. That's fine. But, yeah, these belts, come on. Let's watch title. In 2020, I want to see title defenses. All the champions. Brad Tavares, good friend of the show. He is injured. Man, I wanted to see him fight Antonio Carlos Jr. goes. He lost to Edmund Shabazian after being off for like a year. He really, really needed that W, and he didn't get it. So this would have been a nice bounce-back fight for him. I'm not saying he would have won it, but it would have been against a credible name. But he's out, and he's injured. So that's a little bit of the news roundup there. Enjoy the rest of these college football games, folks. We got a few more weeks before UFC 246 with McGregor and Cowboy, Fajeda and Pettis, Gadelha and Grasso, Maurice Greene versus Alexei Oleinik, Holly Holm versus Raquel Pennington. I know some of you are saying, okay, what's on the main card? That actually is the main card. McGregor and Cerrone is the main event, so they're carrying the weight of the main card. Pettis and Fajeda is legit. Grasso and Gadelha is legit. But the other two, we can't have you all just sneaking in here. This card does lack a little bit of that top-heavy star power that we see on other pay-per-views, but that's what we're stuck with. I was going to say enjoy the rest of these college bowl games, the NFL playoffs. I mean, we'll be back before all that ends, but I'm just saying this run of the NFL and the fall season that keeps us busy is almost over, goes.
Almost.
Yeah. In the meantime, we're going to bounce out of here. Enjoy your Thursday. Be safe, everybody out there. Don't forget to be a champion.